Thank you.
And so, some thoughts from the Gospel of Matthew this morning. We spend the best part of a month looking at the record of Matthew, and I think we were talking about it the other night and thinking that of all, we spend the best part of 3 months reading the Gospels each year. So that's an important focus that we have. So, just to start with the question, does anyone remember which is the first healing that's recorded in the Gospel of Matthew? It's a tricky question, actually. The very first healing that Matthew records. I didn't know either, actually, so you're there, Caleb. It's in Matthew chapter 8, actually. So Matthew waits for 8 chapters before he introduces the first miracle, and that's the miracle of the healing of the leper. And that's what I'd like to spend a little bit of time thinking about this morning. So Mark and Luke both begin their gospel accounts with the healing of the demon-possessed man in Nazareth. But Jesus leaves aside that, Matthew leaves aside that important teaching and goes straight to the Capernaum ministry. But I'd like to look firstly, before we come to Matthew 8, at the background. And of course, the background, as we well know, is the Sermon on the Mount, Matthews 5, 6 and 7. And I'd like for us to begin by thinking about some verses in the end of Matthew chapter 4, please. So we'll read Matthew chapter 4, verse 23 to 25. And this is like Matthew's summary account of what Jesus is going to do and what he did. And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And his fame went throughout all Syria. And they brought unto him all sick people that were taken with diverse diseases and torments, and those which were possessed with devils, and those which were lunatic, and those which had the palsy, and he healed them. And they followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee, and from Decapolis, and from Jerusalem, and from Judea, and from beyond Jordan. And I think that what Matthew's doing by giving us this little summary account is he's giving us an introduction to King Jesus, and he's showing us his qualifications. And I want just you to notice as we just look briefly at these verses again, that Jesus went about all Galilee teaching. That is, that there was nowhere in Galilee that the Lord did not visit and did not share the gospel message. All are given an opportunity to witness Jesus' work. And from here, Jesus' ministry is described as, in verse 23, talking about the good news of God's kingdom and healing all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease among the people. And consequently, in verse 24, the report of this action in Galilee spread far and wide throughout Syria. And I think that's the Roman province just north of Galilee at this stage. And further, as a result of that, more sick folk are brought to Jesus. And it's described in verse 24 as all sick people that had these various diseases were brought to him. And their conditions are summarized as diverse diseases, as torments, as those possessed with devils, as epileptic or lunatic, and those that were paralyzed. And almost to think about those four or five aspects of sicknesses that Matthew outlines for us, and to think that Jesus was able to cure both physical, and that was the paralyzed, those with diverse diseases. He was able to cure what we might call emotional hurt and suffering, those that were possessed with devils. And perhaps we can also consider that there was mental aspects, that the mental cure that Jesus was providing for people with those with torments and of course possessed with devils. So Jesus was able to cure physical, emotional and mental diseases, and he was able to help all, in all areas. All people were coming to him. And therefore I think that Jesus is being introduced to us by Matthew as King Jesus, the one who was able to teach with authority, who took the message of hope to all places, who helped and healed all and every kind of sickness. And as a consequence, great multitudes followed him. And there again, verse 25, the rumour of Jesus has spread far and wide now. It's not only in Galilee and in the northern area above Galilee, it's also now in the Decapolis, and from Jerusalem, and from Judea, and from beyond Jordan. And so in many ways, north, south, east, and west, the message goes out. And Matthew chapter 5 begins with Jesus seeing the multitudes, went up into a mountain. And here, King Jesus is ascending, if you like, a throne. He's up high. We don't know where this mountain is. The point is, it's not so much important, but it's the setting that's important for us, I think. And Jesus ascends the mountain and sits down. And I think this is wonderfully described when the people come to him on the mountain in previous parts of the Bible, in Isaiah 2. And if you listen to these words, you'll know them well from Isaiah 2. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. And many people shall say, come, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And I think here, this is a partial fulfillment of Isaiah's wonderful prophecy. And so Matthew is very careful in chapter 5, verse 1, to describe the multitude. But it's also important to notice that it's that those that wanted more than just to be part of a big crowd, those that wanted to hear and to follow Jesus. And so a part of the crowd made the effort to follow Jesus up this mountain. And they waited for him to be seated, and then they came to him. And it's almost like a king's court, isn't it? You know, the king ascends, he sits on his throne, and when everything's settled, then the people come to him to hear. Like a king's court. And these people are the ones who hear from Jesus directly the words of his teachings here on the mount. The emphasis, of course, that Matthew gives us is he opened his mouth. And of course, that's obvious, isn't it? When people speak, they open their mouth to talk. But here Matthew wants us to see this is the king's decree. The king is speaking. And the words that he's going to speak in the next three chapters are for the disciples that wanted to be citizens of this new kingdom. The type of people that Jesus was encouraging, the type of actions and beliefs and behaviours that Jesus wanted to encourage in Matthew 5, 6 and 7. It's often called the portrait of a saint, the portrait of a disciple. So here's what Peter has to say about this time. And again, I'll read this to you so I don't have to turn it in 1 Peter chapter 2. For this is commendable, says Peter, if because of conscience toward God one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer for it, if you take it patiently, then this is commendable before God. For to this you were called. And so Jesus is calling people to a lifestyle. He's calling people to make choices about how they would behave in situations that were difficult and that would normally human nature takes over and respond in anger or frustration. Jesus is talking about a different type of attitude, a different type of behaviour. So let's come now over to Matthew chapter 8, and I think as we move there, let's think about the connection that we've thought about as a summary. So Jesus taught in the synagogues, he healed all manner of sickness, great crowds followed, and so he ascends the mountain. He sits down, and the disciples assemble to hear his pronouncement, the type of life a citizen of the kingdom will aspire to live. So in chapter 8, verse 1, it's almost the reverse of what's happening. Jesus now descends the mountain. There are also great crowds with him. And once more, disciples come to him. Except this time, it's just one disciple. And I think Matthew is highlighting this to describe the importance of coming to Jesus with your ailments and with your problems. A man we find with a dreaded skin disease or leprosy. And let's just read those first four verses. When Jesus was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, See, thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony to them. The man with the dreaded skin disease, it's called a plague in Leviticus, and that's the severity of what we're thinking about. If this man was following the stipulation in the law in Leviticus, he would have had to do the following. And it says, the leper in whom the plague is shall have his clothes torn. So he wore rugged and ragged clothes. His hair was to be unkempt and uncombed, and he was to cover his upper lip, almost like a mask, and cry out, unclean, unclean. And I take it that was to be a warning for any that came near him inadvertently. But also he was to live alone outside of the camp in Leviticus. So he was to be isolated from both family and from society in general. And I notice the way that Matthew presents the leper to us with the word in verse 2 there, behold. Matthew's saying, look at that. That's amazing. And it's almost like the man appears suddenly. The man, we're told, worships Jesus. And here we have the idea that Jesus is, this man is prostrating himself or bowing his knee or bending his knee, maybe even on his knees in front of Jesus. And his plea is very simple. Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. And I want for us to notice that there's no doubt at all in this man's mind that Jesus has the power and he has the authority and he has the ability. There was no doubt in the man's mind that Jesus could do this miracle. His only question was, Lord, if you are willing. And of course it was a plea to the king. I know you have the authority, I know you have the power, and I know you have the ability, but is it your will? And Jesus' reply, of course, is full of compassion and kindness. And in verse 3, I am willing. Yes, it is my will. Be clean. And of course, coupled with this wonderful show of compassion, he reaches out and touches the man. Of course, he didn't have to. But that's very much part of the healing miracle. The touch, and you could almost think it was like the way he would almost lift the man to his feet, to see him not now as an unclean man, but as an equal, someone that would now enter back into society. Jesus was not worried about the stigma associated with the leper, or about the potential to catch the plague, of course, but rather on making him clean. And it was a combination of touch and command that brought about the man's healing. Although he was much, much more than healed, wasn't he? Because Matthew described it as cleansed. And there's an important difference there, I think. Here again, that's the language of Leviticus. And the priest that would acknowledge that he was clean, indeed. So Jesus skipped, if you like, all the steps of Leviticus about, well, the man would have to be shut up for 7 days more and see if the skin disease that he had actually there was no having to shave all the hair of his body off and then to be brought back into the camp and to be isolated for another 7 days in his own tent, but in the camp. All that was skipped because Jesus had completely cleansed the man. He had brought him to full again and renewed. And there was no need to do all the protocols of Leviticus. And of course, it says in verse 4, all this was to be a testimony to them, to the priests and to those that were examining this man. And it's been suggested that never before in the history of Israel had there ever been an Israelite that was cured of leprosy. No one would have brought the prescribed offering for their cleansing, because the cleansing would never have happened. It is only by divine intervention that leprosy is cured. And if you sort of think back in your own minds to all the cases of leprosy that are cured in the Bible, all of them are by divine intervention. And I think of Moses, when God gave him a sign to put your hand inside your shirt, pull it out, it was leprous. And of course, the healing of that leprosy was miraculous again. Miriam herself was smitten by God by leprosy, and she was cured instantly, but then had to wait that prescribed 7 days. And of course, the well-known story of Naaman, who was cured by following the command of Elisha, but cured by God. Whereas others we know had leprosy that would take them to the grave, it was a lifetime. So of course, what are some of the things that we can learn? Well, I think the most important, of course, is we must come to Jesus. We must approach him as the King, to recognise that he has all the power and that he has all the authority to help us, to be aware that it is according to his will, and to be reassured, yes, I am willing. I do want to help you. And of course, we like to think about leprosy as a type of sin, that dreaded plague, a condition that will take us to a death that cannot be cured by man, only by God. And we are touched. We are helped by Jesus. It is his will. I am willing is Jesus' emphasis in response to our request. And we have this wonderful expression in the Brotherhood, don't we? We say about things that are in the future, God willing, this or that will occur. And in North America, it's Lord willing, I think. North America particularly uses that phrase, Lord willing. And of course, both Father and Son are both willing that we are each made clean. It is their will. Matthew chapter 8, verse 1 to 3 teaches us that it is indeed the will of the Father and the Son that we are clean, that we can be forgiven of sins. I'd just like to come over now, if you don't mind, to John chapter 6, verse 37 to 40. It nicely shows what is the will of the Father and the Son. I am willing, Jesus said when he cured the leprous man. And in John chapter 6, the time when he fed the 5,000, verse 37 to 40, Jesus said, all that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I am come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that everyone that seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I'll raise him up at the last day. And so here is the will of both Father and Son. All that come to me, I will in no wise, I will not cast them out, I will not reject the people that come to me. I came down from heaven, says Jesus, not to do my will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will, but all that come to me, I should lose nothing. We've just got time. Yes, just come over, please, just our last few thoughts together. Luke chapter 4. And this is Jesus' testimony to the people in Nazareth, his hometown, when they were saying, well, look, the wonderful things that you did in Capernaum, do here also. Do it in your own hometown. And Jesus says, a prophet is not accepted in his own country. And he goes on to draw the lesson in verse 25 to 27 about the widows in Israel in the time of Elijah, and lepers in Israel in the time of Elisha. So verse 27, and many lepers were in Israel in the time of Elisha, the prophet, and none of them was cleansed, saving Naaman the Syrian. It was only Naaman who was cleansed, and even he protested about the way that the cleansing was happening. He thought it should have been another way. But regardless, he did obey, and he was clean. And his flesh of leprosy returned as if the skin of a little child. But the tragedy, of course, was that in the time of Elisha, there were many lepers in Israel. But only Naaman was cleansed. And we ask, well, why was that? Well, maybe it was because they didn't approach God, they didn't approach Elisha for that healing miracle. They likewise could have received cleansing, but didn't. The little maid who worked for Naaman, she knew what the answer was. And so what about the rest of Israel? Why didn't they know? Or was it that their pride or their lack of belief prevented them from coming? And what is it, in a sense, that keeps us from seeking cleansing from our Lord? The leper in Matthew 8 both believed and humbled himself. And of course, if you read between the lines, he risked public censure. What are you doing in town here? Get out. You shouldn't be here. He risked possible punishment for breaking the Leviticus law or approaching Jesus. But for he and for us, coming to Jesus is the most important thing that we can do as part of our cleansing. All else must be sidelined. Healing and help come from no other. And I'd just like to conclude with some wonderful words from, you know these well, from Isaiah 53. And here in Isaiah, about the suffering servant, we find that some of the words used about verse 4, about being stricken, my version says, we did esteem him stricken. That's the word for leprosy. So verse 3, Jesus is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And it's not that Jesus was a sad sack, he was a sorrowful man, but he was aware of others' sorrow and others' grief. But in spite of that, we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we saw him of no value. We placed no value on him. And so, for those that came to Jesus for healing, they didn't despise him. They saw him as very valuable, and they knew that they could receive help. Surely, Isaiah says, surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. And yet, there's this human doubt all the time, isn't there? We esteemed him stricken, smitten of God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. That's how God presents him. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord had laid on him the iniquity of us all. Or, as it's mentioned, it's the Lord has made of Jesus to face. He presented Jesus to mankind to face what mankind was suffering and experiencing so that he might take it away. So let's think about some of these wonderful provisions of the Father as we come now to break bread and memory of our Lord Jesus.